So I knew this would be the weekend for me with the opening of Tommy Boy as the clip to open the message. I just knew it was for me. Unfortunately, I do have to admit that I probably know every single line of that entire movie. Because it is the top five best movies of all time. Right? Come on. Okay. So, hey, as Kurt mentioned, my name's Paul. Really appreciate Kurt and PJ and the Crosspoint team giving me the opportunity to share a few thoughts with you this morning. Really do appreciate that, guys. Looking forward to it. Some of you, well, you probably don't recognize me much. Your kids may, as I have spent quite a bit of time with my wife, Katie, in Upstreet, managing the Wii, making sure everybody gets a turn, kind of the Wii Nazi, if you will. And do get a chance every once in a while to be storyteller. So just consider me the big church storyteller today. That'll make me feel a little bit more comfortable. It's interesting, as funny as that movie is, and it really is funny if you've never seen it, don't admit that, but see it, because it is really funny. Great show, a good ending. But it's interesting, those of you who know Chris Farley, he passed away probably almost 20 years ago now, doing all the things he was doing in that movie, right? That particular clip, which is very, very sad. And so to me, that the purpose of showing that at the beginning of some of my thoughts this morning is just to get you kind of grounded in we are not all that different than Tommy Boy. In that, we spend a great deal of time and energy and resources chasing after things, relationships, things in our lives to fill a longing that God has put in us. It's built into us. And so we'll unpackage that a little bit more. I know it's a little bit of a stretch, but you know, they don't give out D pluses very much. So just remember that. That'll probably be the only takeaway from the whole video. So before we get started, since I have made the tremendous leap from Upstreet to big church, let me pray, mainly for me. Lord, I'm thankful for you, and I pray for your mercy and your grace on my words today, that they would be more of your words and less of mine, for your glory, in Jesus' name, amen. So today, we're going to talk about the revolt against idolatry. Idolatry is a word, idols are words that we don't use a whole lot of, except when we're talking about what? American Idol, right? But we don't look at, we don't use the term idolatry a lot. But what's interesting, and we'll see a little bit of it today, what's interesting is the Bible talks a lot from the beginning all the way through the end about this idolatry and the concept of idolatry. And I think it's important to kind of understand up front that idolatry is not something we talk about a lot. It's something we do a lot, though. We just have gotten a lot better than maybe the people way back when at concealing it, right? Kind of hiding it a little bit, making sure that people don't see, putting on a good face, some of those kinds of things. So and then ultimately convincing ourselves that no worries, I got this under, whatever it is, I got it under control. And it's not impacting the way I interact in my relationship with God, right? So that's some of that concept, I think, is very important. So as we get started, I think there's a definition of idolatry that I came across as I was putting this together. I thought it was very important. Kind of outlined it very well for me. Hopefully it will for you. It is by a guy named Paul Moser. He's a professor and a chairperson of the, sounds really important, Department of Philosophy at Loyola University in Chicago. So smart dude. I saw his picture. He looks like a smart dude. Idolatry is the universal human tendency to value something or someone in a way that hinders the love and trust we owe God. So I think there's three important words there that stick out for me. The universal human tendency is really important. So to me, whenever I think of a tendency, I think of something that's gradual, right? Kind of happens over time. You don't really see it. It's not a break, or it's not something just immediate. It's kind of over time. So I think of, did a lot of driving the last couple days. So I think of when your car gets out of alignment, right? It has this tendency to do this thing, right? And over time, hopefully it's not a violent, like you let go of the wheel and it flies off the road, right? But it's this tendency that it goes out of alignment to the right. And I think that when we talk about idolatry, that's ultimately what happened. I'll share a story from the Old Testament where it kind of, to the Israelites, it happened very quickly. Okay, but usually for us, it doesn't happen very quickly. It kind of gradually over time. So I think this is very important. Universal human tendency to value something or someone in a way that hinders the love and trust that we owe to God, that He's put in us to do. So that is our definition. That's what I want to build and kind of unpackage three kind of key points around. Before I go any further, though, Kurt is not here, which is good, because I could say whatever I want. No, even if he was here, I'd be able to say whatever I want. He made that clear. But Kurt, if you're listening on the podcast, my shirt is tucked in. And there's nothing you can do about it. Just be glad I didn't wear the tie I thought about wearing this morning. I don't think I would have gotten away with that. So let's talk about idolatry. Start unpacking this a little bit. Old Testament, Exodus, Ten Commandments. Right. So if I was in Upstreet, I would have said, I already gave it away, but I said, I'm going to share a scripture from Exodus, and that is in the, and I've, you know, we asked the kids to say Old Testament or New Testament, right? And some kids always says Jesus, right? Because that's what you say. I mean, that's always the right answer. Jesus. No, not Jesus. Old Testament, okay? So one thing that I think is important is when we talk about idolatry, how important it is to God and how He views it. So the first two commandments of the 10, so 20%, of the Ten Commandments, and you could argue that the last one is also about idolatry in a certain way as well, but the very first two he gets to are about idolatry. So Exodus chapter 20, 1 through 5, and God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. That's the first one. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. So I think that's a whole concept for another message. But that concept, there's something very important about God's character of jealousy. A jealous God. So I don't have time to dive deep into that, but hang on to that. I'm going to get back to that here in a few minutes. But God is a jealous God, and that's an important concept for us to capture, at least initially here. So why are we talking about idolatry and revolting against it? Because it's an important thing to God, and if it's important to God, it definitely needs to be important to us. So let's look at kind of three key areas that I think idolatry creates in our lives if we're not careful. Okay, so first of all, idolatry creates conflict. Idolatry creates conflict, and there's a lot of different passages in the Bible that I could speak to. But the one when I started kind of talking about this concept of idolatry and conflict, the first one I went to in my mind was in Paul in in Romans, talking about the battle between what he wants to do, and he knows what's right to do, and what he actually does. And I think in there is this concept of idolatry that we all struggle with. So he says in Romans chapter 7, I'm going to read a couple of different verses, verse 19 and then 21 through 23. He says, for I do not, speaking about this conflict, I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. Been there. So I find this law at work. Although I want to do good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner being, I delight in God's law, but I see another law at work in me, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin at work in me. This constant conflict. And so when we put things ahead of God in our lives, which is a tendency for us to do, because I believe so much of things around us and in life are so much more present, so much more physical, so much more available than God sometimes seems. So we have this tendency then to take on things, people, relationships, money, whatever it is, and idolize that, right? And start to hold it on more tightly. And we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, talk about what the impact of that is, right? But it's a human condition. And I think something that's important that we'll talk a lot about as well is that God has created us to idolize. He created us to idolize Him. That's why He doesn't want any other idols. Because He wants us to idolize. That's how He created us. So to idolize something is how we were created. It's what we do with it. It's the human condition. It's what, when sin entered the world, it's what happened to us. It gets us off track toward that. So it creates this conflict. So for me, I see this in my work, in my career. I am convinced, and this isn't a message on justification, right? But I'm convinced that my tendency is to constantly justify that the work that I'm doing, the time I spend away from home, the time that I work late at night, early in the mornings, over the weekends, the time that I take away from spending with my family, that's time well spent because it's up to me to provide and I got to do this, and I justify that in my mind, right? So I'm constantly to have this realignment that constantly happens. So not only do I have that rolling around in my head, then I put it on myself that it's up to me. So there are days that go by, and I deal with all the things that happen that everybody deals with in any given workday, right? And there are days that go by that it dawns on me, you know what? I haven't once thought to give this up to God. What have I done? Well, I got to figure this out. How do I figure this out? I got to do this. I got to call this person. I got to make sure. I got to say this. I got to send this email. I got to do it. So to me, it's a twofold thing. I've convinced myself it's all about my career, and I got to make it happen. So one thing I'm going to challenge you with toward the end is, what are those things? And for me, this is it. What are those things, if it went away tomorrow, how would it change you? Right? If it went away tomorrow, how would it change you? And that's something I've been challenging myself with, because the big joke for us at any big corporation, a lot of changes happen all the time. And you always know the people who have been let go for one reason or another, because they have a date by their name, right, in the email system. So my joke has always been, hey, when the day comes when there's a date by my name, how am I going to do, right? What impressions, first of all, will I have left behind? And what is it going to mean for me, right? And so the thing I've started to challenge myself, hey, if it devastates you the day you get a date by your name, then maybe you're too tied in, right? Maybe it's something, maybe you're a little bit out of alignment, right? So that's something. So idolatry creates conflict. We see a lot of this in sports, right? Athletes, I could name dozens and dozens of athletes, right, that have everything they could possibly ever want or imagine, or we think they could ever want to imagine, and what do they do? Their life is a complete train wreck, right? Their wife ends up chasing them with a golf club, right? Right? Okay. Number two, idolatry disguises itself in many ways. It disguises itself. It's typically never just one single thing. Sometimes it is, but most times it's multiple things that kind of chip away, right? That take away the focus. Now, I've always said the enemy of God, Satan, doesn't doesn't need you to stamp a 666 on your forehead and bow down to him every day to get you, right? All he needs you is just a little off track, right? just needs you a little distracted from the things of this world, the things that they might not be bad things, right? They're just probably not the things that God wants us completely focused on. That's the focus of the enemy in this world. It's just get us a little off track. If we end up stamping 666 on our forehead, hey, that's a bonus, right? But for the most part, just getting us a little off track. So I think for me, that's where idolatry is really important to understand, that it's multiple. Typically, it's multiple things. So again, Paul now talking, I'll get to Galatians here. The Apostle Paul now again talking in Galatians to the church in Galatia, talking about this concept of it's multiple things. He says in chapter 5, verses 19 and then 21 through 23, "So I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the flesh." Again, talking about that conflict, right? They're in conflict with each other so that you are not to do whatever you want. "But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. The acts of the flesh are obvious: sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage." Had one of those on the trip home yesterday. "Selfish ambition, dissensions, factions and envy, drunkenness, orgies and the like. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God." So a lot of stuff in there, right? The main purpose to share this passage with you from Scripture is to just to point out there's multiple things. Now, you may look at some of those and be, dude, I mean, some of those are from the 70s, right? I mean, that kind of stuff, come on now, right? So I get that, but there's some things in there, like impurity, that represents itself in a lot of different ways, right? Debauchery, jealousy, discord, hatred, selfish ambition, sign me up for at least a few of those. Okay? And then those start to, all I'm saying is I think those start to chip away, right? If we allow those to continue to guide us or direct us, instead of, as a concept in sales, we talk about a lot about driving versus being driven, right? So it's that concept. Are we driving these things? Are we being driven by fits of rage and jealousy and discord and selfish ambition, or are we driving those? Are we in control of those? Because those bubble up. How we handle them, how we allow them to guide us is, I think, very important. So remember our definition of idolatry. It's an important kind of drawback here. Idolatry is a universal human tendency to value something or someone in a way that hinders the love and trust that we owe God, right? So it's that human tendency, so multiple things. So as you think about your life and the daily effort that you put in, what are some of those things? It doesn't have to be those, right? But what are some of those things that start to chip away? I think it's important this morning. Let's start identifying some of those, okay? So for me, this concept started, and it's a little bit of a stretch, but I'll tie it back in. For me, when I was a kid, I played all kinds of sports. And I started to get, spent a lot of time playing soccer. So, and typically what you do with any sport, once younger kids start playing a lot more of one particular sport, the next step is to put them on the travel team, right? That's the obvious next step. Now, I'm probably gonna hit a little too close to home in here on this, but you know what? Sorry, I'm going for it, okay? My parents back in the day, it was time, right? I'd played enough. And it was time for me to go to join a travel team. And I have a terrible memory. So I don't remember a lot about it. And I don't even remember this discussion. I don't even remember the conversation. I just remember, hey, the travel team games are on Sundays. And Sundays are a family day and it's a church day. And you're not playing travel soccer, right? And I don't even remember being all that upset, honestly. Maybe I was. But what I do know is 25 plus years later, I value the role of church in my life and the life of my family. And I think that's part due in big part to my parents just saying, no, we're going to value this And we expect you to value that as well. It's funny, because I took that so, I kind of held on to that so much, and I didn't think about it at the time. But now I'm thinking back, I'm like, that was a big deal for me, so much so that as we've lived in like 5 different places the last 10 years. So we've moved quite a bit. Every place we go, first thing we do is we find a church to try to get connected to. And some of those churches have Saturday night services, right, that I would not go to. I mean, church does not happen on Saturday night. I'm here to tell you. Happens on Sunday. Of course, when then I did try a Saturday night service, and then with little kids, right, now you get 2 days to sleep in on the weekend, right? And then it's not complete chaos trying to get out of the house in the morning on Sunday. All of a sudden, I was hooked on Saturday night. For me, it took me some time to get comfortable with that, right? Because I was, I tie that back all the way back to my parents instilled in me this focus, not because it was church and you had to go to church, but just that was important, right? Church was important. The community was important. Making those connections was important. And that sticks with me today. So I think there's a lot of lessons in that. I think the big one for me is, there's so many different things when it comes to idolatry and how it disguises us that gets us off track, right? That could have been a very easy thing to say, no problem, we'll catch up church some other time, or it's only a few months out of the year, or whatever the case. They stood strong, and I'm thankful for that. That's a big deal for me, okay? Number 3, idolatry creates a false sense of security. This is a big one. I think this is a big one for us. Again, kind of going back to the concept, sometimes God feels distant, right? Sometimes God feels distant, and there's so many other things that are clamoring at us all the time that we convince ourselves we got to handle, we got to chase after in order to survive, thrive, be successful, whatever the case may be. And every time I think about that, I think about Paul, the Apostle Paul. Remember, he was the guy that said, hey, everything I want to do, I know what you want me to do, God, but I do the other thing. And here was a guy that saw Jesus face to face. Jesus blinded him for 3 days to prove a point to him, right? And still, after all that, this guy was still doing the things that he knew he shouldn't be doing, right? So it's that human condition that even guys like the Apostle Paul dealt with on a constant basis. So for me, let's go back to the Old Testament. Let's go back to Exodus and talk about this concept, this false sense of security that it gives us. The Moses had gone up into the mountain to get the Ten Commandments, and he had taken a while, and I don't know how long it is. I should have done the research. I don't know how long. Maybe it was a day. Maybe it was 2 days. Maybe it was 2 weeks. Maybe it was 2 months, right? I don't think it was that long. I don't think it was like, you know, a year, right? But he was gone for a while. And remember, Moses was the guy that, you know, parted the Red Sea and the fire cloud and the staff turning into the snake and the locust and all those crazy miracles that God did to bring the Israelites out of slavery, out of Egypt. Wasn't that long ago, right? These folks are saying, and this same guy then goes up into the mountain, and he's gone for a while, right? So let's pick up the story. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said, come make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him. Aaron answered them, take off the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing and bring them to me. So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they handed him and made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. I mean, a lot of work, right? And I guess if I'm Moses, I would have hoped Aaron would have put up just a little bit of resistance, you know? Maybe just like, hey, time out. I think I hear him. You know, nothing. Aaron's just like, nope, come on, bring it, right? Beep, beep. And he starts chipping away at the thing, puts the calf together. And then he said, these are our gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. Now, parents in the room, think of a time where you just did a big birthday party or something big for your kids, right? And you got maybe they didn't say these words, but the attitude was, this is all you got? Is this it, right? Think about that thought that goes through your head, right? Minus the expletive deleted, right? Then multiply that by like 1,000. And that you probably have what God was thinking there. Like, are you serious right now? All right? And remember, going back, remember, he's a jealous guy. It's part of his character. He's very jealous, right? And here's a guy that he didn't have to do. He's God, right? So he didn't have to do a whole lot. But when you look at, and from human terms, he parted an entire sea, right? He did everything for these people. And they, you know what they started to do? They started to idolize Moses instead of God, the one who brought them out. They started to view Moses as that person. And then when Moses was gone, their security was gone, right? So they had to find something. Now, we're more sophisticated than that, right? So we wouldn't do that. Or would we? What are those things in my life and in our lives that we look at and we say, "Hey, I got to have that. If that's gone, I can't live without that," right? And oh, by the way, if you're like me, it's up to me to go get it. Right, and next thing you know, what do we start doing? Right, we start, and it doesn't take that long. So there's, for me, as we think about this, in your connection card, and I'll speak to that in a second. There's one thing I want you to think about. It's an important exercise for us to take. The concept is make a list of everything that you kind of love and enjoy in your life, all the people, the stuff, cars. Things, attributes, skills, things that you kind of count on, you rely on, you put value in. Make those lists. And then think about if those went away tomorrow or one by one. Hey, if I had to live without that. Now, trust me, I get it. There's a lot of love is a gift from God, right? So I'm not saying you wouldn't grieve and mourn, right? I'm just saying, would you be a different person if? Would your life be less full, okay, if those went away, right? Or diminished in some way if those went away? For me, my challenge is my career. If it ends tomorrow, have I put so much into it, right? Have I invested so much of who I am into it that if it goes away tomorrow and I got to start from scratch, that I'm a different person, that I treat my family different, right? That I treat people around me different. Something I got to challenge with. I don't know the answer to that. I know, and I don't want to share the answer with you. So, the movie Heat. If you've seen the movie Heat, it's one of my, if I, Tommy Boy's in the top five, this is definitely in the top 10. If you haven't seen it, it's got Al Pacino and Robert De Niro in it. Pacino's the good guy. Right, De Niro's the bad guy. He's the guy that Pacino's trying to stop. So the whole movie is Pacino's trying to stop De Niro. Right, it's a great movie if you haven't seen it. Great shootout scene. I probably shouldn't say that. We scratch that. So there's a scene in here that makes me think about this false sense of security. Right, we kind of hold on to things really tightly. In this movie, De Niro is talking to Pacino, saying, "Hey, look, allow nothing to be in your life that you cannot walk out on in 30 seconds flat if you spot the Heat or the police around the corner." I think it's a movie, right? It's a line from a movie. I think it's a concept that I want to challenge you with. And I get, we got great families and great relationships. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, is there something in your life that if God said, "Hey, I need you to go this direction, and that direction doesn't allow that," could you walk out on it in 30 seconds flat? Right? And if you can't walk out on something that you're idolizing today, if you can't walk out on it in 30 seconds flat to follow God or something He wants you to do, it's got too much of a hold on your life. Right? So this concept kind of hit home for me. We went to Disney World this last week. It's one of those kind of epic vacations, right, that you take. Lots of funny stories, lots of great stories, lots of great memories, and not the ones that you might think. For me, I've got blisters on my feet, not because of all the walking, but because all the time in the pool playing with the kids, right? And just my feet hurt. But that's great, right? Because all that time. So we were lots of stuff at Disney World. So one time we were walking, and I don't know how it came up, but my son Sam, he's 8, asked me about $1 million. I don't know where it came from. I would, again, my bad memory, right? But Sam asked me about $1 million, and I think the question was something like, how much do you have to work to get $1 million? Right? And I said, wow, man, you really got to work. A lot of effort. I mean, when I made my first million, I mean, it was a lot. I didn't say that. So I just were talking about that a little bit. And then he said something about, hey, if I had $1 million, I would, like we all would do, right? What would you do with $1 million? I think he said something about, if I had $1 million, I would, and I can't remember what he said. And I used that as an opportunity to go scriptural on him, right? Which, of course, is what you do at Magic Kingdom, right? But I just said, so I talked to him about the concept of holding on to things loosely, right? So I said, the things of this world, they come and go. And I said, the Bible talks about holding on to the things of this world loosely because if they go, they go. If you're holding on to them loosely, if they go, they go. If you're holding on to them too tight, then it hurts you. If it gets, because it will get taken away. And if you're holding on to it too tight, a couple things happen. It hurts you. Hurt your fingers, right? It'll hurt you. But then it also, God has a way of when he recognizes that we're holding on to something more tightly than holding on to him, he has a way of doing what? He has a way of taking that away from you, right? Because he's got it all. He's got control of it all. So we're talking about that concept. And so I remember grabbing him on the back of his shirt. And I said, hey, if I'm holding on to this really tightly, what's probably going to happen? And he looked at me, he's like, well, you'll probably lose it. And I said, that, you know, exactly right. In Magic Kingdom, all right, boom, boom. Okay, so we go back that night, we were swimming or whatever, we came inside, and we were watching, and this, I couldn't get it in the first service, we were watching Storage Wars, right, where they buy these, you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. By the way, when I couldn't remember, this is a little take on our current culture. When I couldn't remember the name of it, I got like 15 names, right, of different reality shows. And then that was it, and it wasn't it. So it's Storage Wars, where they buy these storage units, kind of sight unseen, and hope that they find these treasures, right? And then when they find these treasures, they go and they find people to sell it to. And so we're watching the show, and Sam and I are watching, and the big climax of each show is where they try to barter with the guy that they're buying it from or selling it to, and the guy's buying, I'll give you 6,000, no, I'll give you 4, but you know, back and forth, and the drama and the music and whatever. And Sam mentioned to me, he said, hey, Dad, those guys are holding on, you know, they're so they're holding on to the money too tightly. And it dawned on me at that moment, that's a lifelong lesson that we all have to learn, right? Because we need money. Right? Money makes the world go around. So you need to hold on to it enough to be wise and smart with your money, but you can't hold on to it too tight. And what happens to us, and this isn't a message on money, but just money as an example, what starts to happen? Right? It's so easy, especially with a thing like money, to start holding on to it too tightly. And then when you got both hands too tightly on something because it makes you feel secure, what's left to hold on to? Nothing's left, right? Nothing's left to hold on to. I think that, to me, the concept is very important. So I like the idea. So remember, probably not the De Niro thing, but just remember the holding on to too tightly. Hopefully you remember a little bit more about Storage Wars, but you should check it out. History Channel, 7 p.m. Tuesday nights. I don't know. I just made that up. So here's a thought, final thought. God has made us, he's designed us to idolize him, right? So we have that kind of built into us. And when sin entered the world, this started to happen, right? It's easy for us to get off track. So remember that. So a lot of times we end up idolizing good things, right? Just not the best thing. And then because we're human, then we start getting more off track and more off track. And for me, the most important concept is what we do with that, with those things, and what we idolize is will reflect, be reflected on what we leave behind in this world. What we idolize will leave impressions behind. The question is, what impressions do you want to leave behind? So I'm going to finish with this. And it's an email that I sent after one of our sales guys last year, last October, passed away suddenly from a heart attack. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. That's never happened to me before. And it was a guy, he was a friend of mine. He was the guy that I hired and had helped along the way. And we had stayed connected even though I'd moved to other places. And he was still on my team. And so when he passed away, it really, it was a deep impact on me. And probably one of the first times when somebody, so suddenly, right? And many of you may have experienced that, just so suddenly, where it's just you get a phone call and it's just done, right? It's just over. And so a couple days after that, I took some time, kind of reflected on it. I want to share this note with you that I share with my sales team across the country about Mark. And what I want you to listen for is the impressions that he left. And the understanding of, of what we idolize, what we worship, it will be reflected on the impressions we leave behind. It's with great personal sadness that I share with you the passing of Mark Manfred. Mark died unexpectedly of a heart attack this past Saturday. Mark joined our company in 1986, spending much of his working hours, often before 5 a.m., working to make the lives of his customers and his coworkers better. I waited to send this message until tonight, hoping the news was somehow wrong and perhaps I would not have to share this news, but I was reminded again of how short life can be. The last time I was with Mark was back in August 16th when we shared a round of golf and a celebration dinner together with the other top performers from 1Q and 2Q. We couldn't remember what we scored that day, and none of us cared, especially Mark. He was that day like he always had been, happy to be there, glad to be part of it, grateful for the opportunity. When I hired Mark into the TAM role back in 2007, I was excited about his experience in the industry and how that could help us grow our sales. What I didn't realize at the time was how much more valuable he was to the development of the rest of the sales team. Mark always took the time to help anyone, and he did, especially new salespeople to the team. He seemed to always answer your call. He seemed to always take the time to answer your question or go get the answer to your question for you. He seemed more worried about how the branch was performing rather than his own personal performance. Mark wasn't perfect, but he was perfect for our team. He loved his wife Jan and his sons so deeply, and he would share his love for them with genuine pleasure to anyone willing to listen, and he would. On Saturday, I lost my friend. Stanley lost an irreplaceable member of the team, and life will go on. It always does. And honestly, the fact that it does helps. But it doesn't take away the sadness and the void left by a man who added so much value to the lives of those around him. The impressions left behind by Mark will last for many, many years, impressions that left the world around him a better place. I wish you would call me one more time, or just send me one of those 4:15 a.m. emails. I miss my friend, but I know his wife and his sons are experiencing unexpected grief and sadness far greater than mine. For them, I pray and ask for your prayers for comfort and peace during this incredibly difficult time. How we live, what we idolize, this is for you, will be reflected on what we leave behind. What we worship, what we idolize will be reflected on what, whether we want it to or not, it'll be left behind. So when I think about Mark, I think of those deep impressions that he left on people. And that was the one thing that struck me after everybody kind of got over the shock that he was gone. The stories just kind of kept floating in. Hey, Mark, I remember one time Mark helped me and went just so much above and beyond. I heard stories from his wife, Jan. He would call his dad. Before his dad passed away, he'd call his dad every day, because his dad lived by himself. Called him every day on his way home. Never missed a day. Always called his dad, "Dad, how you doing?" And they'd have a conversation. So I just that struck me and reminded me of that. So connection card for you as I finish up. There's three things on this connection card that I want to point out. I think are very important for us to just to reflect on here for the next few minutes. First one, most important. If you're thinking today, hey, you know what? I hear you. I get you. I'm focused on different things and it's hurt me. It has an impact on me. And the more I try, the worse it gets, whether it's relationships or things or whatever the case may be. I'm here to tell you, you can't just change it. You can't just say, hey, today's going to be today. I believe in myself. I'm going to change it. The only one who can change that for you, the only one who can help you successfully revolt is Jesus. It's Jesus. So if you're here today and you've got to make, you've decided, hey, I need to make that revolt, he's the one. It can't be you. You can reflect all you want, right? You can concentrate really hard. But remember the Apostle Paul, he said, I know what I'm supposed to do. I know what I'm supposed to do more than anybody, and still I don't do it. So it's not up to us. And that's the wonderful message of Jesus. It's not up to you. It's already done. He did it. And it's up to us to accept it. So that's number one. I encourage you to reflect on that. Second, I'll have an open and honest conversation with God about a idolization in my life or a craving in my life that I'm seeking and filling outside of Him. I encourage you to think through that. I think there's much value in that. Make a list of everything I love and enjoy and think about if I had to walk out on it in 30 seconds flat, what would it do to me? Right? And if it changes who you are and your relationship with God, start to chip away at it. Right? Start to chip away at it. That is the revolt that we're talking about today.